You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon and welcome to The Weekend. And joining us today are Tim Bryce and John Fawcett with the National Weather Service. Tim is a meteorologist, forecaster, and John is the meteorologist in charge, or the MIC. We're going to talk a little bit about, this has been a season, and we've talked about it before the interview, Tim, about hurricane season, and that starts generally in June.
Right.
But people remember Katrina and Rita, and then hurricane season kind of was calm.
There was always a hurricane season, but we had a drought of landfalling hurricanes in the United States. We had plenty of hurricanes, but they either moved inland into Mexico or stayed out to sea in the Atlantic Ocean. But we just had and I'd have to look up the number of days, but it was a record number of days between landfalling major hurricanes. But now, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, we've started to make up time as far as, we had so long without them, and now we've actually had two major landfalling hurricanes in the last 2 weeks. Very impressive.
And someone was mentioning this over the weekend, says, gosh, it looks like these hurricanes are just lining up one right after another, and here they come.
Mm-hmm. And that's not uncommon. Actually, someone posted on social media a picture from, I want to say it was 10 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago, of almost the exact same setup, where there was a small hurricane in the Gulf of Campeche down south of Brownsville. There was another major hurricane in the Caribbean and another major hurricane out in the middle of the Atlantic. Same thing we just saw in the last few days happened like 12 years ago. It was so this does happen. This is the peak of hurricane season, so it's definitely to be expected this time of year. But like I said, for the last several years, we've had these hurricanes. They've developed, but then they've moved off. They've recurved up into the northern part of the Atlantic and haven't impacted the U.S. But now these two last ones have definitely impacted the United States, as we've all seen.
Let's talk. John and Tim are with us, Tim Bryce and John Fawcett with the National Weather Service. Let's talk a little bit about hurricane season is here, started in June, but people may wonder, well, how do hurricanes start? How do they develop? And then how do they go from different categories? And then we'll talk about the names as well.
Well, it's all a matter of the atmospheric conditions and the ocean. Hurricanes love warm, very warm ocean water, and in fact, almost hot. And they also like it to be relatively calm in the atmosphere around in general. Yes, you start with a little disturbance or a tropical wave or something like that, but if the conditions are right, that system, that little disturbance, can become a tropical depression. It's getting organized, okay? So circulation is becoming more, and at that point, they get a number. Okay, and there are six regions in the world where these tropical cyclones form. We call them hurricanes in our part of the world, typhoons and other parts, cyclones, other parts of the world. The tropical depression gets a number, and if it continues to strengthen and organize, once it reaches sustained winds of something like 39, 40 miles per hour, it gets a name as a tropical storm. And many, many years ago, it used to be only female names, now it alternates, male, female, male, female. Harvey, Irma, for example. Okay, tropical storm continues to strengthen when it reaches sustained wind. We're talking sustained winds, not a gust here and there. Sustained winds with higher gusts. Sustained winds of 74 miles per hour, then it becomes a Category 1 hurricane. And then it continues to strengthen, and it goes up through the categories. I don't know the exact cutoffs for, Category 2, 3, 4. I do know that I think a Category 5 starts at 155 sustain or something like that. Irma at one time had 185 sustain, one of the strongest, if not the strongest, ever in the Atlantic Basin.
Yes.
That part of the world. Okay, typhoons have been a little stronger. They have a bigger playground in the Western Pacific. But the thing, these were unique. Harvey, people forget, Harvey reached Category 4 when it hit Corpus Christi. But the bad thing about Harvey was getting caught between a couple of major circulation systems. Couldn't go anywhere. It just kind of meandered around and around and didn't – it just kept piling up the rainfall, and you had in one instance 51.88 inches. That's the heaviest rainfall from a single event in the continental United States. There was a place in Hawaii that had 52 inches, probably tropical as well. But that's just amazing that the flooding was off the charts from Harvey. And then you get Irma with the amazing wind speeds and also hitting as a Category 4 in the United States, Florida Keys. But it was a high-end 5 when it just obliterated those Caribbean or Caribbean, however you want to say it, islands. And then, Tim, you were mentioning we can't just think of that area. We also have to think of the East Pacific, another hurricane region. And you were mentioning the models were, you know, it wouldn't last as a hurricane this far inland. But one of the models was even, what were you telling me this morning?
Well, every once in a while here in the Southwest, we'll pull in a tropical system from the Eastern Pacific. That happened, what was it, Odile?
Odile
gave
us
a lot of rain just a few years ago. Mm. So every other year, we managed to pull a tropical system off the Gulf of Mexico, or not the Gulf of Mexico, but the Gulf of California, the Baja area region, and it pulls it right up. And one of the computer models was indicating that we might get some rain associated with a tropical system this weekend, specifically on Sunday and Monday. As we were coming to the station, I checked the latest models, and it was somewhat tamping that down, not bringing as much energy and moisture up in our direction. But that is, during the late, as we move into fall, that is one of the locations where we do get some of our rainfall, is from the remnants of tropical systems that move up off the coast of Mexico. Now, like John said, we don't have to worry about the storm surge. We don't have to worry about the real strong winds. But what they do for us is they can bring lots and lots of rain.
What about, as you mentioned, that when we were watching news reports of Harvey and what was going on in Houston, some of the people on television were talking about, well, this is just the beginning. The problems will begin once it hits land.
I tell the forecasters in our office, when it comes to flooding, once the rain stops, that's when the flooding begins. And there was just some of the unique things about Harvey was that they had flooding going on, and it was still raining very, very hard on top of them. And I think some of the frustration that the people had down there was that water was coming up into their homes, and the federal officials and the emergency officials were telling them, get on your roof to get out, you know, don't go in your attics, because they had learned in Katrina that people went into their attics and then they became trapped there as the water came on up. So they were telling people to get on their roofs. But in this case, the rain was still pouring down, and it was just making a very difficult situation. In addition, in these outer bands of these hurricanes, you get quick spin-up tornadoes.
Yes.
And so it's a very difficult thing. Do you go up on your roof to get away from the, you know, water coming into your house, or do you go down into your house to avoid being hit by debris related to the winds of the hurricane and the potential of a tornado? Harvey in Houston area was a very difficult situation. And just like John mentioned, unprecedented amounts of rainfall that led to that just amazing floods that we saw over there.
And what about, Tim just mentioned tornadoes, and a lot of people assume, well, you know, tornadoes really don't happen in this area, or tornadoes happen at a certain time of season, not during hurricane season. But as you mentioned when I was talking with you yesterday, the fact that, yes, this is something that we need to prepare
absolutely.
For.
When a hurricane makes landfall, see, it's been over that smooth ocean. It encounters the friction of the land, and that kind of starts to slow the wind speed down. You get vertical wind shear, and that is one, and you've already got the circulation around the hurricane. So there are different types of tornadoes, and these tropical tornadoes associated with a landfalling hurricane. you know, maybe they don't get to the EF5 Joplin, Missouri strength, okay, a mile wide, completely flattening everything. You don't need that. You're adding that tornado, maybe an EF1, EF2, which is fairly strong. You're adding that to the hurricane winds and all, everything else. Think of all the threats you're encountering with a landfalling hurricane. And there can be many, many tornadoes associated with this. A lot of times they'll go in with these damage surveys afterwards and they'll determine, oh, you know, this is hurricane wind damage, but look at this. Here is a tornadic damage right there within, you know, the hurricane. So that's not a good thing. And that's Irma is probably getting into the main tornado part of her dying stage right now, as we speak, while we're being recorded now.
We're visiting with Tim Bryce and John Fawcett with the National Weather Service, and we're discussing our hurricane season and some other things that are going on in the country, earthquakes, wildfires. And while we're still on the hurricane situation, how long does a hurricane season last, or is that hard to determine?
Well, the season is determined. It has a start date for our part of the world, June 1st and, what is it, November 30th?
I think so, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. That doesn't mean you can't get a hurricane before or after, as we have seen in recent years. And I think the season starts a little earlier in the eastern Pacific. Mm-hmm. Most people in the United States ignore that region of hurricanes. However, we in the El Paso area, there could be a lot of relatives down in Mexico that are affected by these hurricanes. And so up in El Paso, we still have to pay attention to, as Tim mentioned, you get them late in the season, they start curving around. And we could get remnants up here like we've seen in the past with Odile and others. And maybe less common, but even every now and then from the Gulf of Mexico, if mm-hmm. you can remember Donna from 2008, and that caused a lot of flooding and even fatalities in the Ruidoso area. Mm-hmm. So as Tim mentioned, we don't worry about the sustained high-end winds, but we do worry about the flooding. And so, yes, that's the hurricane season. We can't be locked into those dates, but Tim also mentioned, because he's a rock star with meteorology, September is the peak time for tropical systems for our part of the world, September, and we're in it. But that doesn't mean you – well, when was Sandy?
Yeah, it was
Remember?
Late season. Yeah.
That was late, because it kind of interacted with a winter storm. Mm-hmm. And that was a weird one, you know, back a few years. So, but that – New York and that part of the country.
You've been mentioning Sandy, Donna, Irma, Harvey. How are the names selected for hurricanes, and when did this come about? Tim?
There's a committee, actually.
Yeah.
There's a group of people, and I want to say it's based through the World Meteorological Organization, yes. The WMO, and it's they set up names not just for the Atlantic and the Eastern Pacific hurricane basins, but like John mentioned, there's several basins all around the country, whether it's a typhoon or a cyclone, or around the world, I'm sorry, or the typhoon or a cyclone, and they have names set up for those systems around. And it's the way it works is that there's a list of five lists of names, and they just rotate through them. So one year they use one list, the next year the next list, and after the fifth year they go back to the first list that they used. Now, in the case of major landfalling hurricanes, they retire those names. So they'll never be, you know, they haven't officially announced this yet, but I'm sure there will never be another Hurricane Harvey. They're going to retire that name. They're going to, they're going to retire Irma. And they retired Sandy. And so we'll never have, when you have a major impacting hurricane, they retire those names and they put in it. You know, in 5 years, we'll see another H storm. I don't know what it'll be, but they'll slot in a new name there. And so what they do is they just work down those lists. Like John mentioned, actually in the old days, they didn't used to name the systems. Then they started naming them Alpha, Beta, things like that as they went. But then that got confusing from year to year. So then they went to just the female naming. And then I guess the men wanted their due. So they switched them over. And like John said, they alternate them between male and female names. And they, like I said, they do them for all around the country. I know for the Atlantic Basin, they're based on their Spanish, English, and French-based names. So that's why you've got a Irma, a Harvey, and actually a Jose is out there as well right now. So you can see they take it from the people groups that kind of colonized this area. That's where they use some of their names. That's the names that they use for.
Oh, and speaking of Jose, Jose is weakening, at least at the time of this interview. One of the reasons is Irma was so powerful. She stirred up the ocean. When you do that, you bring cooler water up from underneath. So it's unfortunate that you put up with Irma. But if there is any little bright side, any hurricane that tries to follow, probably within a week or two or so, will not reach its full potential because it doesn't have that very warm, warm water to work with. It's just regular warm. That's what's happening probably with Jose right now.
We're visiting with Tim Bryce and John Fawcett with the National Weather Service. And Tim, you were mentioning in your office as you were working last night the fact that there were all kinds of things going on in maps in different cities across the world, I mean the United States. And you mentioned that in addition to the hurricanes, of course, there were wildfires, earthquakes. If you wouldn't mind telling us all about this and how that works.
Well, in our office, we have we're very focused on southern New Mexico and far west Texas. But being weather weenies like we all are, we like to watch the weather. So we have a big wall with the big TVs on it, and we had them turn to different stations watching the weather in Key West, in Miami, and just, you know, tracking that on social media. Social media is a great resource for weather information. There's all kinds of people posting pictures of models, people posting pictures of storm damage or what they're doing during the hurricane. I was looking on Snapchat, actually, to see what people were doing in the Orlando area as as Hurricane Irma was making its way up the peninsula of Florida. So it was kind of interesting to see that from a social media point of view. But the neat thing about the Weather Service is that we're divided into 122 offices around the country, and we all cover our own little geographic area, and we become subject matter experts for those areas as far as the weather goes. So, you know, people in Norman, Oklahoma, or Blacksburg, Virginia, up in Glasgow, Montana, they cover a certain area around those cities. We cover basically all of South Central and Southwest New Mexico and Far West Texas, and they become the subject matter experts because when it comes down to weather, many times it's on the local level that makes a big, big difference. And then also getting to know the people in the area, getting to know the different geographic highlights. It's one thing to say that there's a big thunderstorm over Deming, but you know it's real nice to talk about the Florida mountains that are just to the east of Deming. Talk about the road, you know, New Mexico 11 that runs south out of Deming. To give people specific landmarks that they can draw upon really helps them make better decisions when there's significant weather. So that's our job, is to get to know the people in our area of responsibility and how to best serve them and provide the best weather information that we can. But having said that, since there's a lot of these weather offices, we can actually deploy in times of need. They've sent over a dozen meteorologists to Florida to help support those offices, the Miami, Key West, Melbourne, Jacksonville, Tallahassee, and Tampa Bay offices all had extra people brought in to help support them as Irma made a landfall. In our own office, we have Tom Bird, who is a incident meteorologist, and he's specially trained to go support the fire weather community. So, you know, for all the fires that have been occurring in California, Oregon, and Montana, he can actually go on site and provide minute-by-minute weather information for those fires, and he's specially trained to do that.
So is this something that, is it Tim Bird or Tom Bird?
Tom Bird.
Tom Bird. Yeah. Okay, Tom. So does he advise the give the advice to the firefighters about the winds, anything like that?
So much of the fire fire behavior is based on weather. And a lot of it has to do with topography, but the weather plays a big role. And he helps them in planning on where to move assets, where to attack the fire. You know, is the wind going to be blowing from this way? Because you might want to swing assets out of the way because that's going to change the way the fire is moving. Do they want to, certain operations, they want to pull people out of the way if they're in a certain canyon that they might get trapped in because of the wind change that's coming. He also monitors the weather because, as we've seen with Yarnell, was it Yarnell Hill?
Yeah.
They had a thunderstorm pop up. And it dropped a real quick outfall boundary, and it just flared up a fire, and it killed, I forget how many firefighters.
A lot.
It was more than a dozen.
19,
yeah,
something like that.
It was an unfortunate accident. But that's Tom's job. And the other IMETs, many offices around the Weather Service have incident meteorologists, and that's their job, is to help the fire boss plan the fire, how to attack the fire, but also to give them that heads up when the significant weather is changing.
We're visiting with Tim Bryce and John Fawcett with the National Weather Service. Both of them are meteorologists. Tim is a meteorologist and forecaster for the National Weather Service, and John is the meteorologist in charge, or the MIC, as we were talking about before the program started. One of the things that Tim mentioned is that local is very important to people. And of course, you know, you always talk about this is what may happen in the weekend, this may happen tomorrow. Let's talk about, because driving conditions are very important, and we were talking about social media at the beginning of the interview, actually before we started, and the fact that because of that, it's kind of helped you all when there are flash flood warnings or anything like that.
Yeah, Tim is I would say he's the leading or one of the leading social media experts in the National Weather Service. He's requested from around the country, you know, to speak on this type of thing. And so, Tim, I would like you to address the benefits you have seen on with social media, its impact on our office, and it's been a big one.
Sure. I'm a big fan of social media. That it's just it opened so many doors for us, not only for us to be able to push out information. For so many years, the Weather Service was a push-only kind of organization where we put out a forecast or a warning, we sent it out, and we were done. And now with social media, it gives us a new advent to not only push out that information, but also to pull in information and then to interact directly with people in a way that we've never been able to do before. And it's been just very heartening, we really enjoy it that we're able to, you know, when a hailstorm moves into the east side of El Paso, almost instantly we get pictures from people just posting pictures of the hail, the size, and that really benefits us. You know, we usually know that some kind of hail is falling, but it really helps us to know, is that little pea-sized hail or is it big golf ball-sized hail? And it helps us to better refine our warnings, better warn people as far as the weather that's coming as that storm continues to progress. But it also helps to build community. I think that's one of the best things about social media. It helps us build community, helps us to reach out and provide specific services. Social media gives us benefits where we can issue different products, maybe in Spanish, where we're not as able to do as well in some of our more formalized products. But social media, we can do what we want. So within reason, of course, with my boss sitting here next to me. But it does give us a lot more freedom. And, you know, we're able to reach out to people in a more direct manner. And then I think something else that has changed, because not only with the social media, with the advent of the smartphone, which many of us now have with the WEA messages, the wireless emergency alert messages. You know, in years past, say 10 years ago, when we would issue a tornado warning or a flash flood warning, people would complain that they didn't get the message. And, you know, you would, well, do you want me to call you personally? I can't call every person individually and tell them. Well, now with these smartphones, with the wireless emergency alert messages, it's essentially we can call everybody within the area that we set up for a flash flood warning or a tornado warning. It all gets on your phone. And what that will do is to maybe prompt you to say, hey, if I'm getting this message, then I could be in harm's way. I need to go look for other information. And maybe turn on the TV to look at some of our partners in the media who are always doing a good job as far as informing the public on what's going on in the weather. Get on our website, check other social media platforms that we have that we're pushing out information all the time. So these WEA messages are really a great thing that they're able to get the message out. And since they're geocoded, which basically means that in theory, they only are supposed to light up the phones within a certain area. So if we issue a tornado warning or flash flood warning for the west side of El Paso, in theory, the people on the east side of town, their phones will stay quiet while everybody's phones on the west side, if they're inside that little polygon, because we draw a polygon, kind of a square usually, all of their phones will light up. And that just prompts them to, A, there's significant weather. Do I need to do something? And then that just starts the questions, helps them know, brings them back to awareness. Because I know here in El Paso, we're very blessed with very beautiful weather. And I can't blame people. They're not always paying attention to the weather. And many times, especially during the monsoon season, weather can sneak up on you if you're out at the park or something. But, if you're out at the park in a picnic and all of a sudden you get an alert on your phone, the first thing you're going to do is, where am I going to go to get to safety? And I think it's just a great way to help get people thinking about the weather and get alerting them and then getting them to look for that other information.
You see how excited he got when we turned him on to social media, that topic? It just launched him. Wow.
You mentioned we're very blessed to live here in the Southwest. And, despite the hot weather or the winds, dust storms that we get in the spring. But and you and I were talking about this, that, well, people need to move if they want a different season. But people are always going to ask you, what kind of weather are we going to have in the winter? Is it going to be cold? And you know that, here in El Paso, because we're so used to having nice weather, if it gets to 67, better get a jacket or something like that. So what can we expect for this coming winter or the fall?
Well, we haven't seen the Climate Prediction Center outlooks yet. I mean, we've seen their way distant ones, and I actually have to give talks to Department of Transportation around the area, but that's usually not until October when we get a better signal on. I do know that there is neutral signal, no real like El Nino or La Nina that you can hang your hat on. And neutral, there, you look at past neutral years, and we've had all kinds of, weather from quiet to very active. So, as meteorologists looking out for the next 7 to 10 days, to be candid with you, we don't really know what awaits us this winter in terms of, is it going to be, stormy? Is it going to be snowy or anything like that? We can come back in a couple of months and give you a much better idea.
We would love to have you.
And another thing we can do is go ahead and look at those lists of hurricane names for the Atlantic and East Pacific Basin. And if we see Louis for an L,
watch out.
We're going to warn the public.
Category
6.
It'll be the first Category 6.
Yeah. They'll retire me before I even go on. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for being with us. We've been visiting with Tim Bryce and John Fawcett with the National Weather Service. Again, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.